The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Talk This Way right here on 710 Kenya with George Brockler on The George Show. Final hour before we turn it over to Charlie Kirk and then John Caldera in for me tomorrow. But I'll be back Wednesday through Friday and all the days thereafter. Asterisk. And I say that just because obviously things pop up. Hey, listen, we were having a conversation with Jason about this equity equality thing. And I ran out of time. As I said, our show is different, right? If you listen to anyone else on at this hour on any other talk station, they just do it differently. I want the conversation, whether it's by text or by phone. I prefer by phone because we get to have that live exchange. That's how you share information. This is the town square. And so I say that as a preference to if you call, it's almost like the field of dreams. It's like field of calls. If you call, I will put you on. All right. 303-696-1971. I want to honor Jason's patience before. And I'm sorry I had to cut you off, sir. You were about to say something. I think it was, why do you look so much like Matt Damon? I don't know the answer to that. I can't answer that. But you had something else you wanted to say.
That was part two of the question.
Okay, great.
I tell you, George, I think, again, it's something that a lot of us miss. The world that you and I and most of our peers live in is a very thin sliver of society. And what really opened my eyes to that was social media. And I don't mean anything derogatory here, but I'm also not going to sugarcoat anything. You look at social media and how many people can't even construct a sentence or a paragraph, and the way that they talk, the conversation that it takes to fix these things is going, you know, 6-7 layers deep of in the onion, and they can't get past the second layer. And there's a lot fewer of us that are in the middle class than the have-nots, I'll say, because we're being touted as the haves. And the have-nots, I'm going to say, is just a larger percentage. And you, when that's a larger percentage, say you only need 50% of the have-nots to stand their ground versus, say, 100% of the haves, and that number is still bigger with compliance.
That's
now, like
true.
I said, like they say with safety, to be safe, you have to be spot on 100% of the time. The evil actor only has to be right once, only has to succeed once to, you know, bring violence or a crime, you know, to be successful. And again, with just the numbers of the difference in, I hate saying the haves versus the have-nots, because I've had a job ever since I could push a lawnmower.
That's privilege, Jason. You got a job because you're a white male.
Exactly. Exactly. And I tell you, I'm in the aviation industry, and I can so see this happening now. And I don't think it's going to be good in my industry. Give it 5 to 10 years, and I don't think it's going to be good. And I'll tell you, working with air traffic controllers, I can see that in the dialogue back and forth that we have on the radio and stuff. It's like, wow, the way the dialogue goes now versus the way it was 5 years ago, that there's snarkiness and there's,
really?
I'll say, laziness as far as the way things are conveyed, that it's like, this isn't good. And when you get 10 years down the road and you have the younger generation on one side of the radio, the younger generation on the other side of the radio, hopefully they'll understand that words have meanings. You have to convey exactly what you're going to do. You have to comply with what you're being told, because there are life and death consequences at the other end of this. How this plays out, you know, I don't know.
And just in matters of importance in our lives, how many times do these people or expect us to make decisions based on something other than excellence? I'll give you an example. If your son or your daughter were going to have to go under the knife for some sort of life-altering surgery, maybe life-saving surgery, do you care for a moment the color, gender, religion of whoever that cutter is, as long as they're the best at what they do. In the aviation industry, Jason, do you think when people pile their family onto a plane to go to a vacation or whatever, they're looking at the cockpit saying, I sure hope they're giving some fill-in-the-blank demographic a chance to fly this thing? They're saying, I hope whoever's flying this is the best at what they do. I want them to get my family there safely. And yet with everything else in the economy, we seem to just sort of are asked to swallow this idea that, yes, we can disadvantage some and advantage others because of some sort of weird notion of historic, discrimination or disparity that exists. Like, in your own life, you don't make these decisions.
No, so I'm in my mid-50s, and where the thing that I have a hard time comprehending is...
A little louder, Jason. I'm losing you for a minute.
Oh, sorry. I'm in my mid-50s. The thing that I don't grasp is how people my age don't understand. I don't care what race, color, sex, creed you are. You need to get the job done. The younger generation, I can understand because they've been taught this. And again, between listening to your daughter last week, I've got a 22-year-old stepdaughter who... live in Arizona now, raised in a conservative family, and we all get along. Dad's in the picture, conservative, everybody in the family gets along. We all love each other. She went to school in California, and I can see her mind questioning. She's surrounded by liberals out there, questioning why do they have a different view than what we have. People my age on this, U.S., and where I'll put it to people, to liberals my age, I'm like, who do you want? Do you want a tattooist or somebody that's going to pierce your face? Do you look at that at race, or do you look at that at their ability to do things?
Jason, I can't thank you enough for sticking around and advancing
the
conversations.
Thank you for taking my call.
And thanks for listening. I appreciate that. Jason's line is open, 303-696-1971. I wonder where else we would tolerate equity. Would we tolerate it when we watch the NFL? Or the NHL or MLB or NBA or even your high school sports? I mean, there's a place for this, right? Like when you're talking about rec league ball, especially early on, I get it. Everybody gets a chance to play, whether they're good or they're bad, whether they're super awesome or they're not super awesome. And I've had kids on each end of that spectrum. I get it, right? I understand that. But there is a point in time at which competition matters. It defines America. Competition defines America. You take the competition piece away, all of a sudden equity makes a ton of sense. We want everybody to be at the exact same place. But now we have the Vice President of the United States, and I wonder if KJP or Kamala Harris are going to answer the question, what do you mean by distributing these federal relief funds, these recovery funds, based on race or income? Or some other demographic or socioeconomic qualifier or characteristic? When are they going to be made to answer for this? And really, begs the question, what's the role of government in all this? Should government be in the business of assuring equity, which is equality of outcome or equality of opportunity? And if so, what? I'll give you an example from my own life. My son has a muscular dystrophy. And so mobility is a big issue for us. And I look at stairs and buildings now in a way I never, ever did before. You take it for granted that two or three stairs is what separates you from the inside of a building. My son sees that, and he sees K2, right? Ice. When it snows or it's slick on the ground, you're like, well, I'll just take baby steps. For my son, it might as well be a flaming pit of fire. The idea of being unstable on his feet, he just doesn't have the ability to do it. And so I have a new appreciation for this. So when I look at the Americans with Disabilities Act, and I got to say before, I'd be like, I do not appreciate the arbitrary assessment of how many parking spaces ought to be given for this, to that, or the other. I tell you now, I look at handicapped parking spaces, and if I see somebody parked in one and they don't have the handicap plates or sticker or the tag that hangs down, I want to vandalize their car. I want to set fire to their car. Because I get it, man. The difference between walking 10 feet into a building and 100 is going or not going. I can't explain it better than that. I mean, it matters to me in a way that it didn't before. So when the government steps in to say we're going to have these Americans with Disabilities Act modifications made to buildings, I couldn't be happier. I'm like, great, yay. And when new buildings are built, I want them to think about those who have mobility issues and accessibility issues. So in that way, I do think that's an equality of opportunity thing. And for me, because I am now focused on it in a way I never had to be before, dang it, man, I want government in that business, right? That's how they get an opportunity. I'll give you an example. My dad's 80th birthday was a week ago this past Sunday, and I told you about it. We went out to a place called Sim's Steakhouse. It used to be Sim's Landing. So my sister, you know, engages them. Not cheap, by the way. An expensive place to host 35 to 40 people. And the food's great, and the service was good and all that. We go in there. Two things happen. This sounds like this could go into Grievance Monday. I drive separately from my kids. I'm coming from the airport. My plane was delayed from Miami. I griped about that. I make it to the state. So my son drove. And I said, I called him up. I'm like, hey, are you guys here? Yeah, we're here. I'm like, are you parked in a handicapped space? And they say, no, the valet guy told them they're full. So we have to park at the bottom of the parking lot. And, you know, we're going to use a wheelchair and push tray up. I'm like, No, you're not. There's no universe in which that's going to happen. So I go up and I see the valet guy sitting in his car monitoring the valet lot. Now, keep in mind, there are only two handicap designated spaces and they are full because this is a place that has an older clientele. I get it. There are probably half a dozen valet spaces just open sitting there on this Sunday evening. I go up to the valet guy and I go, hey, my son needs a space up close here. He goes like, and I'm not trying to disparage him. He has an accent and he just says, well, there are no more handicapped spaces. It's just too bad. I said, no, there's no too bad, my man. My son is not going to be made to walk or wheel himself up a quarter mile to get up here because you're hanging onto the spaces that put money in your pocket. That ain't going to happen. Now, as it turns out, when Big Daddy gets a little animated and raises his voice, sometimes I imagine it can be a little off-putting. And so the valet guy goes, oh, you can just park right here. Has us park in front of the red curb, you know, where the fire truck would go and crush your car to get out of the way to put out the fire. You can just park right here. And I'm like, great, we'll park right there. So I have my son come up and he parks right there. We go inside and there are stairs. This banquet room that has been reserved has three stairs down, followed by a short walk and like a dozen stairs down. They have no handicap accessibility. And I say to the woman, I'm like, well, listen, my son has mobility issues here. I'm not going to do stairs. How are we going to get down there? And she just looks at me. She goes, well, we don't have handicap accessibility. We're an old enough building that we don't have to do that. That language offended me greatly. I'm never going back there. Never, ever, never, never, never going back there. They could offer free food for a month. I wouldn't go back there. The idea that we don't have to pisses me off. Now, I get why the government does that, but at that moment, this small government, this libertarian-minded small government conservative guy thought, I wish the government made you do it, but if you don't, then I'm going to subscribe to Jim's libertarian free market thing here. I'm not going to use you anymore, and I'll never recommend anybody use you again, because that bothered me that much. So for my dad's 80th birthday, while we're downstairs paying thousands of dollars for this, my sons and I are sitting at a table distant from them. Now, that's a market thing. That's a government. But when it comes to other buildings, the accessibility thing matters to me enough that I want the government involved if the market won't do it. And I get Jim. Jim would call in and say, hey, you just stop frequenting the places that don't offer handicap accessibility. That's not good enough. There's such a small portion of the market, you would not have enough people respond positively to it. So that's my long-winded, personal, selfish way of telling you, I do think that there's a role for a government to play in trying to provide some opportunities that wouldn't exist otherwise and that the market wouldn't account for. I believe that. I do think the government has to step in there. But where do you draw the line? Go ahead,
George. I love the idea that you talked about this in the framework of the ADA, because the ADA does show us that we have equality of access, not equality of outcome. It means that all of us should be able to get in and out of these buildings and these locations together. But it doesn't mean we all get to do it at the same speed or at the same time. Sometimes getting in and out with handicap accessible is quicker. Sometimes it's slower.
That's right.
And I think that's the point, is it's not about making both experiences equal. It's about making sure that both groups of people have equal access. We need to be at the same starting line or at least around the same place. Where we end up can be different. That's okay.
And I like it, too, with that analogy is that, listen, we all get an opportunity to go into the restaurant, even if we all can't afford the same meal, even if we don't all end up eating the same thing, we can all at least get into the building. That, for me, should be the role of government in terms of this opportunity piece. And the question is, where do you draw that line? My guess is the equity people, the equality of outcome people, would say that all along the way, the government should be finding ways to get you into that school ahead of the white middle class kid, because that's the same thing as the handicap ramp. I don't believe that, but that's the discussion that we should be having. This idea that we're going to distribute funds after a natural disaster based on some socioeconomic or demographic qualifier characteristic, it just is, it's offensive to me as an American. But I'm also not going to tell you that I don't think that the government has a role to play here. I'm living it. I will be an advocate for the ADA and its improvement because I believe in that. And I'm telling you, when my son goes around as a consumer of education and we take tours of schools, he instantly identifies which schools are handicap accessible and more than others. DU, gone. It is dead to him because the time he went out there, there were two buildings that had this, oh, you can't come up through the front stairs, but we have this side entrance a block away that you can wheel down and then you can go to this elevator and this. That's it. That at that moment, I knew my son would never want to go to DU. Boom, over, end of story. CSU, kid loves CSU. CSU has gone out of its way to make accessibility a feature. So when we talk about this equity thing, I think the equality of outcome is bunk, but I do think the government has a role in providing some opportunities. Here's some texts that have come in here as the phones come in at 303-696-1971. What's the name of that place again? It was called Sim Steakhouse. Here's one. Equity is accepted and encouraged in golf with scoring handicaps. Yeah, that's interesting. That's interesting with scoring handicaps, and yet you don't see it in the PGA tournament. Maybe that's something you do in the social part of golf, but you don't see that in the tournaments, do you? Here's one, PGA Tour Inc. versus Martin, decision by the Supreme Court, applicability of Americans Disabilities Act of 1990 with professional golf tours, blah, 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 required golfers to walk between shots during third stage of the qualifying tournament, which argued was an important aspect of the game. Golfer Casey Martin, whose circulatory condition impaired his ability to walk, sued the PGA Tour under the ADA, asserting that it must accommodate his disability by allowing him to use a golf cart. The Supreme Court ruled for Martin in a 7-2 decision. Boom, baby. So why then does it matter what gender or color the new Supreme Court justice is? Such a great question. I think that's an equity of outcome kind of thing, an equality of outcome. Here's one. Agree with caller about performance. I had one accountant who literally could not alphabetize. The only thing worse is an accountant who can't count. She would put invoices in wrong folders. Also had another accountant who's dyslexic and did journal entries backwards. I could actually work with the dyslexic accountant because I taught him how to check his work. Oh, my goodness. Here's one. Equity is similar to inclusivity. As long as you follow certain rules, you will have a better chance to be successful. Equity could be the final nail in the American coffin. George, this equity issue tells the world that Martin Luther King never existed, and his speech about judging people by the character, by their character and not the color of their skin, says that is no longer relevant in our world. I really do wonder, by the way, if Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. had survived until now, what he would think of all this, if we'd have even gotten here with his voice. Would he have become marginalized because he wasn't radical enough on these issues? I wonder what he would say about these things. 303-696-1971. Also, I want to let you know before we cut away about the superheroes, and that's who they are at Bingo Reverse Mortgage. You heard our conversation with Amy Duncan from Alpine Planning, a wizard, as she tells us about the things that are going on in the financial market and how to navigate those and the things to be on the lookout for. One thing that you know is that inflation is run amok. You know that OPEC is meeting on Wednesday and they're likely to cause the price of oil to surge, which means gas to surge again because they want to hold back barrels, like 1 million barrels a day or something like that. I couldn't even tell you what impact that has on the market, but they clearly think it will. So you're asking yourself, hold on, George, how in the heck am I supposed to retire with everything going on? And the way you retire is you call our friends at Bingo Reverse Mortgage. They are the folks that can figure out, with your help, how to get into that equity you've earned through years of paying your mortgage on time and weathering the financial storm, seeing real estate surge and then level off again, maybe even decrease a little bit. These are the folks that can help you tap into that equity to help protect your retirement. And even if you're not ready to retire, if you're 55 and older, they can tap into that to help you just take some of the sting out of the inflation, help you to pay some of the bills that you might be struggling to pay right now. They want to rescue the American retirement, and they're in a position to do it. You ought to give them a call, 720-541-5545, or visit bingoreversemortgage.com. If you tell them I sent you, and we've already had people text in, I get the sales folks let me know because they get contacted when this happens. Listeners who have followed my advice and called these folks and done business with them, and they're like, you know what? It was super educational and super painless to get done. And they wanted to let me know that. I appreciate it when you do that. If you use one of our advertisers, one of our partners, would you let me know about it? And if not me directly, the station, because I love hearing those success stories. If you tell them I sent you, there's an appraisal, obviously, you'd have to do to get any kind of a mortgage, including a reverse mortgage. The cost of it, about $1,000. That gets refunded to you at the time of closing. That's a huge benefit. Jump on that. Equal housing lender, call 720-541-5545 for cost information and conditions. Licensed in Colorado, NMLS ID number 226-8418. That's bingoreversemortgage.com, bingoreversemortgage.com. When we come back, your calls at 303-696-1971. More of your texts, and maybe even a little Ron DeSantis. It's George Brockler at 710 KNUS. George Brockler at 710 KNUS. It is the George Show. Just a quick reminder, and you heard this over the break, we're doing this Rescue Colorado event on October the 18th. It is not just a Hugh Hewitt event. Now, Hugh is nice enough to come out here. He's going to be part of the moderating. We're going to have on Joe O'Day and Heidi Ganahl and Ken Buck and others. But I'll be there. Stefan will be there. I think Deb and the others will be there as well. But this is really an opportunity as we head into. Remember, ballots dropped the day before. They go into the mails, I think, on October the 17th. This is an opportunity to motivate and get together those folks that are going to help get that final push out there to get the word out about saving Colorado. Now, if you are satisfied with the way Colorado has gone over the last 3 years under Governor Polis and Attorney General Weiser and Secretary of State, I'm not going to say it, but Griswold or whoever the treasurer is because nobody knows who it is, then it's easy. Don't vote. Don't vote, and they'll get back in. Don't go on social media. Don't push your friends to vote. Don't walk a neighborhood. Don't call anyone. If you're satisfied with that, let it go as is. And we'll continue down the same fiery path that we're on right now. But if you want to make a change, Rescue Colorado, October the 18th. Go to 710KNUS.com. Check it out. Get some tickets. Join us there. We'd love to pack the house. It's out at the Douglas County. I think it's the event center out there in Douglas County. It'll say on the website. But I will be there for sure. And so will the other folks. And come on up and say hi and tell me, one, you don't look anything like Matt Damon. I appreciate you telling me that. But also that you listen to the show, that makes me feel really good, too. Our number, 303-696-1971. We have been talking about this Vice President Kamala Harris statement that they are going to somehow link the distribution of recovery funds, of these federal funds to help rebuild hurricane-struck Florida and probably South Carolina to something more than the loss, but instead to try to take into accommodation things like, you know, race and economic standing. Like those two things have anything at all to do with the devastation wrought by Hurricane Ian. And I'd really love it if the White House would answer the question either through KGP, and she's just not good at what she does, God bless her, or Vice President Kamala Harris to answer the question, what do you mean when you talk about equity in those terms? And so we've had a bunch of texts that have come in about this whole thing. And then here's someone, progressives don't want equity for people of color that are conservatives. Thomas Carson and Danny Moore in Colorado, just to name a few. I think that's true too. They don't want equity for that. You have to be the right kind of person. It's kind of like Emerge Colorado. Emerge Colorado isn't in the business of promoting women in elected office. It's in the business of promoting liberal or progressive women into elected office. It's like that polling out of Denver I told you about last week that shows that a good percentage of voters out there want to see more women in elected office. That's fake. Those people aren't voting for Heidi Gnall. Those people aren't going to vote for, well, they probably wouldn't vote for Pam Anderson, but they have an alternative that's a woman in Secretary of State. But they're not going to vote for Heidi Gnall. They wouldn't vote for Barb Kirkmeyer. I mean, they're not going to. They would vote for a Brittany Pederson and say, well, that's because we need more women in elected office. By the way, there's a race we just cannot, we cannot afford to put who Peter called Heroin Barbie. I don't agree with that, but I know you, the listener, know her that way. We cannot afford to put her in Congress. I mean, this is Mrs. I want safe injection sites on every street corner except my own. There's just no way we can tolerate that in Congress. So if you get a chance to go out there, look up Eric Odlin. One of the other things, though, that I wanted to talk to you about, happy to take more comments on this equity thing, which has really driven the conversation for much of the morning, is that there was a statement put out by Ron DeSantis, and we're going to get to it in a moment. And it was a statement that touched upon looters. And as you know, there is a portion of society, and they're the ne'er-do-wells. They're the folks that look at every crisis as an opportunity to poach and to steal. And you know what? Some of them might be in the white-collar business community, but there are a whole bunch who love to storm a and we see these videos, by the way, all the time on cable. Not on CNN. They refuse to show them on CNN or MSNBC. But you see these communities swamped with people breaking in and stealing stuff and just running out, right? There's also those who are looters who show up to areas ravaged by nature and use it as the same opportunity. Run into homes and just steal. Because one, they think they're entitled to it. Two, they think they can do it with impunity. And it's the impunity piece that really Ron DeSantis was talking about. Well, he makes some comments, and those comments might have gone unnoticed, but for Joy Reid. As you know, Joy Reid, an incredibly an incredibly progressive person who is, was she the head of that MSNBC show, Down with Whitey or something? I can't remember what it's called. No, it's called The Readout. I'm sorry. She tweeted out that the governor's comments that I'm about to play for you are akin to a segregationist Miami sheriff, Walter Headley, from the 60s, saying, when the looting starts, the shooting starts, suggesting that Ron DeSantis's comments that you're about to hear are laden with racism. That's what he's saying right here. It's racist because, as you know, looters are not white people. White people can't be looters. I'm not sure what she's saying here, but it sounds racist in its suggestion. But let me get to the statement that she's accusing of being racist. This is Joy Reid calling this statement racist. Wait for it. Listen to the whole thing before you make your judgment.
The other thing that we're concerned about, particularly in those areas that were really hard hit, is, you know, we want to make sure we're maintaining law and order. Don't even think about looting. Don't even think about taking advantage of people in this vulnerable situation. And so local law enforcement is involved in monitoring that. You know, I told Kevin if the state needs to help as well, because, you know, you can have people, you know, bringing boats into some of these islands and trying to ransack people's homes. I can tell you in the state of Florida, you never know what may be lurking behind somebody's home. And I would not want to chance that if I were you, given that we're a Second Amendment state.
Wait a minute. Everything was golden until that last 20 words or so, right? Like, oh, holy racist. To one, say law enforcement's out there working to stop looters. The state has offered to help to come in to stop looters. And oh, by the way, we're a Second Amendment state. Maybe don't take that risk. Is that racist? Did you hear racism there? 303-696-1971. And why would Joy Reid even go there? I mean, it seems to me that the only racist comment in that exchange is Joy Reid's. To suggest that what Ron DeSantis was saying had something to do with race and not conduct, that's racist. It sounds like Joy Reid is suggesting that, oh, we know what he's talking about because black people are the looters. That's what Joy is suggesting. Well, black people are the looters. That's who Ron DeSantis is talking about. People behind the house of shooting are black people who are looting. Can you think of anything more racist than that? I don't get why she continues to be on television, by the way. I thought MSNBC had gone dark. I did not know it was still on air until I read this story. It turns out it is. And the 1,500 or so people that watch her show apparently are entertained with her racist notions of calling another governor racist. But this is another point of this conversation. It seems to me that what the governor is saying is reality. Honestly, I'm not sure why in a circumstance where there's a fire, and I know that never happens in Colorado, raging wildfire, and people are told to evacuate their homes. What's the downside of telling potential looters, hey, we've asked people to leave their homes. Some of them may not have. And here in Colorado, a Second Amendment state, I'd be wary of going into someone's home. I mean, folks, we have a law on the books that we colloquially call the Make My Day Law that says you get to use lethal force inside your home if you reasonably believe, and ain't nobody going to challenge you on this, reasonably believe your health or safety or someone else's is at risk, right? That you're at risk of serious bodily injury or death, So why would it be racist, Joy Reid, for a governor to say, just a heads up, there are people that may take matters into their own hands and try to eliminate looters. And here's Joy rushing forward in a tweet to decry Ron DeSantis as racist by, I think, suggesting that the looters will be black. That's what it sounds like. If she thought the looters were going to be white, then that wouldn't be a racist thing at all, would it? Or maybe she's thinking black people will be the property owners who arm themselves and shoot the white looters, which would also be permissible under the law, at least according to what Ron DeSantis, not the law, but circumstance that Ron DeSantis talked about. His comment wasn't about race at all. It was about bad guys loot during a catastrophe. Good guys may want to defend their property. Now, let me be clear. You cannot, should not, and it should never be tolerated that you defend your property with lethal force. I believe that. But I also believe that when someone is in your home, you don't have to quiz them on, are you here to do me harm, my family harm, or just to take stuff? In fact, my presumption is, if during a catastrophe, if I were going to protect my home and someone were to enter my home without my permission, my presumption would be, you're there to do me or my family harm. And I'm going to take the appropriate measures under the law. So it's when Ron DeSantis suggests that some folks out there in a Second Amendment state, like Colorado is too, by the way, even though there are great efforts by the progressives in power right now to continue to erode that right, is he engaging in racist dialogue? 303-696-1971. Here's some of the texts that are coming. Did you know Joy Reid is from Colorado? No. She is an embarrassment to the state, is what the texter says. What ticks me off are people like Michelle Obama, AOC, Kamala, etc., who either portray that they grew up poor or that the U.S. is so racist they did not grow up poor. And if the U.S. was racist, how did all these non-white people succeed? Probably through affirmative action. I'm kidding. It says Joy Reid is the racist. Here's one. The definition of looter does not include color or ethnicity. What? So here is a screenshot of it, a picture. Looters, a person who steals goods, typically during a war or a riot. It seems to me there's one person whose brain is fixated on the color of skin of somebody else, and that's Joy Reid, not Ron DeSantis. Listen, happy to take your calls at 303-696-1971. More texts are coming in. You can hit us there at the 710knus.com or 710knus app. We're going to cut away for a break, but not before I tell you about Step Denver, and they are back, baby. When I say they are back, they are back here to start telling the stories. We head into the holidays, something that you can do, right? When you look around and you see how fentanyl has taken over Colorado, homelessness, drug addiction at all-time highs, the overdoses are ridiculous. You may ask yourself, what can you do? Now, we have a lot of conversations here about policy changes and changes in lawmakers and the executive branch as a way to do this. But there's something you can do without having to be political at all, and that's genius. Donate your vehicle to Step Denver. Here's what they do. They take your vehicle. You may not think it's worth very much, but to them, they can clean it up, fix it up, and get top dollar for it, which benefits you because it becomes part of your tax write-off. But they turn around, and every vehicle donated is a man they can get into that program. This isn't a week-long, month-long, year-long program. This is a multi-year program that is designed not to just throw a hug around every homeless person or addict and say, it's not your fault, we'll make it all better, but to help them get to rebuild their lives through the four pillars of sobriety, work, accountability, and community. This is not for the faint of heart. It's for people that want to make a change. And if they do, they can do it through this program. The people that make it through here, they stay rehabilitated. That's what happens. Since January 1st this year, 710 CanUS listeners have donated more than 56 vehicles. That's 56 lives in this program, folks. $4.2 million economic impact positive right here in the community. Contact Step Denver today. Donate your vehicle. Tow is free. The whole thing is hassle-free. And you're saving lives. I mean, there's nothing else you can really do short of being an EMT or an emergency room surgeon or police or fire. You can be a lifesaver just by donating a vehicle that maybe you had scant use for. Maybe you thought about trading it in. Don't trade it in for those hundreds of dollars. Give it to Step Denver. Donate it to them and save a life. Call them at 303-296-9020, 303-296-9020, or visit stepdenver.org. That's stepdenver.org. Cutting away for a break, we'll be back for one last segment before I cut you loose to a guy named Charlie Kirk. It's George Brockler on 710 KNUS. Sing along if you know the words.
It's been such a long time. I think I should be gone.
We should have karaoke radio right here. We should do that on Mondays also. You call in and sing along with the first few seconds of the song of your choice. I think that could redefine what we do here under the FCC. George Brockler, that is classic Boston from the Boston, I think from the Boston album. Is it called Boston, the very first one? Pretty sure. Mark, you ought to know this. Mark's looking at us through the glass. It's Boston, yeah. Late 70s, I believe. Fantastic music right here on the George Brockler Show, 710 KNUS. We have spent the morning in a discussion of a couple different things. After we went through Grievance Monday, which really had some traction earlier in the show, if you didn't get to listen to it, go back and listen to the podcast. It's a staple. It's going to keep happening. We're going to continue to do Grievance Monday here because I think, one, it brings us all together. Like, unlike some of the other radio shows out there that are consumer driven and all that, we don't care to solve your problem. We only want to complain. That's it. We're just looking to vent. So if you have the opportunity, bring your over the weekend woes, consumer, in fact, throughout the week, consumer issues to us right here on 710 KNUS. Had a couple great calls this morning about it. Interesting one from a guy, HVAC guy. But I shared with you mine. And in fact, some of the ADA discussion was also a Grievance Monday type thing. I'm glad we got it out of the way here. And then we spent a good chunk of the show talking about Kamala Harris. She's the vice president of the United States and has somehow cryptically, maybe not so cryptically, suggested that the distribution of federal funds for recovery purposes out of the devastation that Hurricane Ian leveled at Florida and South Carolina ought to be based upon race and economic condition. And so I did a bunch of research on equity and the difference between equity and equality. And of course, I was really disappointed to see that my daughter's higher educational institution, which her parents, that's me and my wife, are dumping tens of thousands of dollars into on an annual basis, has defined equity as something we all thought it was, and that is equality of outcome. It has nothing to do with equal opportunity along the road. It is all just equality of outcome. And that means that the process doesn't have to be equal. The process can be, in fact, must be unequal to arrive at this equality of outcome. And it made me think about, if you remember this from school, I don't even know if they have kids read this anymore. I'm going to suggest this to my kids. It's a short read. But that Kurt Vonnegut short story, it appeared, I think, in a magazine first back in early 60s. I want to say 60, 61. But it was, before my life, by the way. And that is Harrison Bergeron. This equity feels like Harrison Bergeron 2.0. I'm going to try to fit in at least one more call before we go. She was nice enough to call in. Artis, you're on 710. What do you think, Artis?
Hi, George. Well, this is kind of an aside, but the other day I was listening to the news when you guys were off the air, I might add, and somebody referred to Ian as, well, whatever he decides. And I thought, well, that's kind of an assumption. If you're assuming it's a he and not one of the other 50 or 60 genders, I think
that's right. Call them the hurricane that. Should be able to decide which gender it is.
Yeah. I mean, aren't we very.
And what if the hurricane doesn't want to be a hurricane? What if it wants to be known as a tornado or a snowstorm?
Or a hurricane. Or a
himicane. A himicane is genius, artist. Thank you for that. That is so funny. It is, I guess it is weather fluid, right? Like it can be whatever it wants. Maybe it wants to be a sunny day. Maybe the hurricane is sick of being discriminated against because everyone sees it coming and says this blows, no pun intended. Mm-hmm. And it says, I want to be something else. Great point, artist. Thank you so much for that.
Okay, end your day with a laugh, you know.
Thank you for that, artist. I appreciate you listening and, of course, calling in with that. That is really genius. Artist's line is open, 303-696-1971, but I'm not even sure I can get to another call at this point. I do want to finish, though, by telling you about this trip I took out to our friends out at Littleton Jewelry out there just south of Hudson Gardens off of Santa Fe. I talk to you about them all the time. I can't stop singing their praises, especially after going to their big grand reopening with the expansion in there that's designed almost entirely for custom design jewelry. They are expanding into that. Now, if you remember Jesse, a locally grown product who hires a bunch of locally grown products, this is a guy that has taken his parents' watch repair business and expanded it over the years to include buying and selling of jewelry and precious metals like gold and silver and platinum. And I don't even know what the other precious metals are. And then also coins. They expanded into coins. And now they've expanded the physical space as well as the products they offer to include custom design jewelry. They'll take you through the process from sketching to CADing, you know, the computer stuff, to the wax model, to whatever it is that'll get you to the point of really appreciating this thing you're about to do, this unique, can't get it anywhere else piece of jewelry that is like a legacy heirloom quality piece of jewelry that you give to somebody you love. Like a morning radio host. I'm not suggesting you go out there and get me a custom piece of jewelry. I'll take stuff off the shelf. But if you wanted to do it for someone that you love, a mom, a dad, a girlfriend, boyfriend, fill in the blank, this is the place to go to do it. They are fantastic. You can find them so, so easily just south of Hudson Gardens on the west side of Santa Fe. Turn right at the jewelry repair sign. You can also visit them at littletonfinejewelry.com. That's littletonfinejewelry.com. We need to get Jesse on the station here at some point. Hey, listen, that'll do it for us on this edition of The George Show. Tomorrow, Johnny C., John Caldera, will be on. Stay tuned. Fill up his phone lines with a bunch of calls that do two things. One, facilitate his conversation, but two, keep asking, where's George? Just for fun. Keep calling throughout the 4 hours asking, when is George going to be back? When is George going to be back? Such fun. Listen, I'll be back on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and all the days thereafter. You just stay tuned. Charlie Kirk next, Deborah at 3, Stefan at 4. It's George Brockler, 710 KNUS.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.